You're listening Pretty Late, and that's more music from Molehill with their song No Reprieve. And we want to thank engineer Bob Ferguson for making them sound so amazing live in studio. That was probably one of the best performances we've had, and it would not be possible without Bob Ferguson. Thank you so much. We are in studio with attorney and adjunct professor from Northwestern Law University, Todd Belcour, who also works for the Anti-Poverty Law. No, what is it? No, you don't work
Chicago for Chicago International Social Change Film Festival?
That's what I said. I heard it both ways.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Through film.
Yes. Trying to bring change.
Clearly.
And raise awareness. And also raising awareness for humor, for music, for drinking is Brandon C. Price.
The important issues, I've got the background.
So. No, but you always have a great insight on so many different issues across the board on both sides of the political aisle. And joining us online on our phone right now is attorney Rich Lenkoff, the better half of Legal Face Off on WGN Plus. The other guy is Jason What's-His-Face. Is that about right, Rich?
Yeah, we forget his last name, as we always do, which is appropriate, given that he is somewhere off doing something nefarious at this time of night. But yeah,
that sounds,
Jason Whiteside.
Sounds about right. Where are okay, now we've talked to Todd a little bit about his thoughts on the passing of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. What were your thoughts when he passed away on Saturday, when you heard the news?
I was surprised. You know, like most people, I did not know that he was ill or think he was ill. He was in pretty good health. So I was surprised and then, you know, immediately thought of the implications on the court. In fact, I was driving home from taking my son to the Monster Jam rally out in Rosemont.
Nice.
And my friend who took his son is a pretty right-wing kind of guy, and we immediately got into a discussion about, you know, whether the Senate would block Scalia's replacement. So, you know, like many people, it immediately devolved into this discussion about politics. You know, sort of sad that people didn't really get to mourn Scalia very long until people started to talk about the implications on the court.
No, you're right. And there were a few, you know, moments, if you turned on the broadcast, whether it was CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, that talked about his journey being the first Italian-American on the Supreme Court, his incredible development as a legal mind. And, you know, you're right. There wasn't enough time to kind of go, look, this man had a significant impact on the way law is carried out in this country. Yeah, no, but I'm saying Todd saying he did. Yes, but we did. I mean, some people do at some point. But when you said that your friend was talking about how, you know, Republicans might block, did it ever occur to you that they would just come right out and say he can't do it? He should not even bother, because that's basically what Mitch McConnell has said.
I was a little surprised at how quickly McConnell said that. Although my friend, who, you know, is sort of the same mindset as McConnell, literally within minutes said, yeah, there's, you know, the thing is dead on arrival. So, you know, I wasn't surprised. I was a little surprised at how quickly it happened, but ultimately I think the McConnell, you know, and the others fell right on partisan lines. So not too surprised.
Well, we've been talking about this too. Wouldn't this be a great time to just kind of put up everybody and let the people that, you know, if everyone's a surefire denial, if they're all going to be blocked, then put up people and allow the country to watch the process and, you know, have. And unfortunately, that means that some people will kind of go through the grind but to no avail as
a
far
martyrdom.
As a little bit. What would that look like if, you know, the Senate hears testimony from possible judges and that, you know, men and women who are qualified and just, you know, just say no, just for the sake of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll make the Republicans look pretty terrible if they put up a judge who is clearly qualified. I mean, you know, a lot of talk is on these two judges who were approved in their current seat just, you know, within the last 12 months by a count of 97 and 96 to nothing. So how can you approve, if you're a Republican, how can you have just voted unanimously in favor of these Court of Appeals judges or appellate court judges, and then, you know, 6 months later, just because they are, you know, potential Supreme Court justices, find that they're not qualified? Marco Rubio yesterday said on the Sunday talk shows that there's a higher standard. I mean, there's a bit of a higher standard, but not that much different. I would ask, you know, Rubio and these other Republican senators, why were they qualified 6 months ago if they're not qualified today? So, mean, to answer your question, you could go one of two ways. You could nominate someone who is, you know, very liberal and who is definitely not going to get approved. But I would, if I was Obama, you know, nominate someone who is a little more moderate, who otherwise would be qualified, and let the Republicans show that it's clearly not based on their qualifications that they're, you know, voting against these justices. It's simply based on partisan politics, which I think looks ridiculous.
And I agree. And it would be interesting to see how that would play out. We've been talking a little bit about how Justice Scalia had such a prominent presence and possibly influenced other justices. Who do you think steps in kind of now? Is it Justice Roberts as kind of the more prominent voice in the court? You know, he is the Chief Justice.
Yeah, I think Roberts, you know, he has the potential to do that, but, you know, he's scorned by a lot of Republicans for, I mean, we saw it in the debate Saturday night for a couple of his decisions, including upholding Obamacare a couple times. I think Kennedy becomes really, you know, even more important than he was before. Kennedy has always been traditionally the swing vote because he hasn't been stridently conservative, but I think he becomes even more important as we go forward. I mean, you know, Kagan, Breyer, Ginsburg, they're all, you know, always going to vote, you know, fairly liberal. The Republican nominated people like, Thomas and Alito, they're always going to be, you know, voting fairly conservatively. But the ones
I just snorted a little bit whenever I think of Clarence Thomas. I don't know why, just because it just seems like he's such an outlier when it comes to ever even saying anything on any decisions. Am I wrong about that?
He has a vote.
He has a vote, but he hasn't.
He's the polar opposite of Scalia. I mean, Scalia really ushered in the era of justices questioning attorneys from the bench a lot more than they ever did. Before Scalia, you know, justices didn't really ask too many questions. Well, Scalia came in and changed that. And then Thomas is the polar opposite because Thomas, you know, has asked like one question in the last 20 years.
Exactly.
So a couple different ways of approaching these hearings, but I've got a great Scalia story. So four or five years ago, I went to a event for Scalia's. He wrote a book. He co-authored it with another professor. The book was about how to argue before the court. Great book. Just, you know, Scalia, even though he was a pretty brilliant, one of the most brilliant legal minds around, the point of this book was, you know, just talk very simply, approach these cases simply rather than, you know, with a lot of legalese. Anyway, went to the book signing and he was taking questions. And for weeks I was preparing and I was thinking, what would be the question I should ask, you know, this brilliant legal mind
right. Who
I had studied in law school. So this was probably 5 or 6 years ago when Bush versus Gore was still, you know, somewhat fresh in the mind of the public. And, you know, if you recall, the Bush versus Gore case was about whether the Supreme Court should step in and stop Florida from counting the votes for the presidency. Well, I was sitting, by the way, right near Scalia. He gave this very interesting discussion and took questions and answers. All the questions and answers have to be written down on a postcard or sized piece of paper. So I wrote down my question, thinking that, you know, maybe he wouldn't get to it because there are so many questions. Well, after reading a couple of questions, and this was a very, very conservative audience, everything he said was being, like, literally eaten up by the audience. Very supportive. So he picks a cue card after about 2 or 3 questions, and I know it's my question from the way he sort of looks at it. And he starts to read it, and my question was, how do you, he was in the majority in Bush versus Gore, so I said, how do you reconcile longstanding Supreme Court or longstanding conservative deference to the states with your decision in Bush versus Gore? The point
Good
of my question.
Question
was,
yes.
Yeah, if you're conservative, you all, you know, you believe in states' rights and leaving the states alone and letting them decide, yet in this most important, you know, arguably the most important case in the last 50 years, Scalia, in the majority, wrote that they should, you know, step in and not let Florida decide, but the Supreme Court should decide to end the questions. Anyway, he starts reading the question, and you could tell that he was really sort of pissed off with the question, and, you know, how dare the questioner question the decision. And as he's reading it, he gets to the word precedence, and he sort of stops. And remember, there's probably, you know, 1,000 people in the room, very conservative crowd. Already when they heard the question, they were unhappy with the tone of it. So when he gets to the, when he gets to the word precedence, he stops, and you could hear a pin drop. And, you know, he's a very sarcastic, you know, very sort of witty.
And dismissive, a little dismissive, let's say.
Very dismissive, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he gets to the word precedence and stops and spells it out. He says, precedence. P-R-E-C-E-N-D-E-N-C-E.
Oh no.
As he spells it out, the entire crowd just roars in laughter.
Oh.
As he points out that I misspelled the word precedence.
Oh no.
And then, you know, he didn't know who asked it, but I mean,
right. Well, you're certainly not going to step forward at that point, right?
Yeah. I was pointing to my buddy next to me, and I felt like the whole room was like staring at me. So then as he points out how stupid the questioner is for misspelling precedence, he goes on to explain why, substantively, it's a ridiculous question. Anyway.
Did he answer your question to your satisfaction? Your satisfaction?
Well, he didn't really answer it. He sort of said, like, get over it, which he said a bunch of times. Book versus Gore. But then just the follow-up to the story is afterwards, I get in line to have him sign my book, and I get to the front, and he signs it, and then I say, Your Honor, if you wouldn't mind signing it to the idiot who can't spell precedence.
Nice.
I'd really appreciate it.
So you have that.
I have it in my office. Now the final part of that story is there's two ways of spelling precedence. He meant it as the plural of the word precedent. I meant it as precedence, E-N-C-E, which is a proper way of spelling it. But, you know, who am I to question Antonin Scalia?
Yeah. Well, apparently you gave it your best shot. We have to take a break here. We want to come back and maybe talk a little bit more about the Supreme Court situation, but also about the Jackie Robinson case that's coming up. And we are hanging out with Rich Lenkov. In studio, we've got Todd Belcour and Brandon C. Price. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by Brandon C. Price and Todd Belcour. We also have on the line with us from Legal Face Off, Rich Lenkov. Hey, Rich, before we start talking about the Supreme Court, and, you know, this is going to be weeks, months discussion, but what does it look like if he is not allowed, if the president of the United States is unable to name a replacement? What happens to the court? What happens to any cases in front of the court?
Well, you've got a 4-4 tie, you know, if it is a 4-4 tie, not every case, of course, you know, is a 5-4 decision. But if you do have a 4-4 tie, that means that the lower court's decision would stand. And, you know, we'd have to wait until there is a 5-4 majority to take those cases up again. So any cases that are pending and do result in a tie, it would be as if the Supreme Court never decided, the lower court decision would stand, and then it would be up to a litigant to take that same issue up in another case before the Supreme Court in the future.
Because that was my understanding, that the lower court's judgment might stand, and that might impact some cases that would be, I think, beneficial to Republicans and also possibly against what they want, right? There's a union case that's up. There's an abortion case in Texas. There's a lot in the balance here when it comes to long-term decisions.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans, you know, ought to be concerned about cases if they do block Scalia's successor. They ought to be concerned about cases that they're hoping to overturn at the Supreme Court level that otherwise would stand. As you mentioned, there are some lower court rulings that Republicans are very aggressive at bringing in front of the Supreme Court. And, you know, before the Scalia court, they would have probably overturned it. Now, if it's a tie, then the lower court decision will stand. Of course, you know, the opposite is true for cases that liberals wanted to overturn. return. So it cuts both ways.
It's a lose-lose. I mean, some people are saying it's a win-win for President Obama, where, you know, the Republicans, if they dig in, they look like they're being complicated, they're being difficult, and, you know, perhaps that will jeopardize some of their seats coming up in the elections later this fall. But it seems to me that it's a lose-lose for everybody if you're just all being jerks.
I mean, there's no – listen, I think over the last – even in the last 24 hours, we've seen, a lot of Republicans step back from this, knee-jerk reaction that they won't even consider it. I don't know how, especially – the ironic part is Scalia was an originalist, right? We've all heard that he was – a believer in the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. How could you talk about replacing an originalist by not adhering to the very words? I mean, it's completely nuts. Like, the Republicans are just making this stuff up out of thin air. It doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that the last 11 months of the, president's term, you shouldn't be allowed to nominate your successor. He should be allowed to nominate him up until the day he leaves office.
And to be fair, it's not all Republicans. It's leadership right now. Mitch McConnell and the gentlemen that are all running for the presidency are the ones that are stepping up in front and saying, let's delay this, let's make it hard, and that kind of stuff. But I think there are a lot of people on both sides who are like, let's let the president do his job.
Well, I haven't heard, like I said, there has been some moderation from Republicans who aren't running for the presidency, but the Republicans are the majority in the Senate. That's the body that would, hold hearings. There hasn't been. I don't think there's been one Democrat who said, "Let's block this." I mean, it's been all Republicans.
Right.
I don't think there's any serious person. They don't have to be an elected official. Just any serious person who has a basic understanding of the Constitution who would argue that Obama should not be allowed to nominate Scalia's successor. And I don't think it's proper to block the nominee simply on political, on a political basis. If they want to hold a hearing and prove that the nominee is not qualified, that's one thing. That's an incredibly hard burden, though. I mean, remember, anyone who Obama puts up is going to be, one of the most qualified legal figures in the country. So it's going to be a rejection simply on partisan, and political reasons.
Before we let you go, we are talking to attorney Rich Lenkoff from Legal Face Off on WGNplus.com with his less intelligent, less brilliant. Todd's like, why gotta be so mean to Jason Whiteside? You don't know. Unless he comes on the show, I can neither negate nor qualify any of the statements that are made on this show. What is the case with the Jackie Robinson baseball team?
We saw the, I think it was 13... our parents of 13 of the members of the team file a lawsuit against Little League International and also Stephen A. Smith, who's an ESPN commentator, saying that they suffered emotional distress and other damages as a result of the team being stripped of their title. We all know that Jackie Robinson West made it to the Little League World Series and lost ultimately, but they won the North American Championship, and they were later stripped of that because Little League International decided that they violated the rules because many of the players didn't meet the geographical boundaries of that the league required.
Right.
Now they're suing, saying that they weren't aware of these boundaries, they weren't told of them. They weren't aware of these eligibility restrictions, and that they literally made a lot of money off of the story. I personally think it's sort of a ridiculous lawsuit. Like many lawsuits, it'll be very difficult to prove, even if there is liability, even if the plaintiffs can prove that somehow there was some liability, like many lawsuits, damages are very difficult to prove. I don't know what damages can be proved.
Right.
Emotional distress allegation is one that I defend, every day, and it's just, it's rarely something that's legitimate.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if they. My guess it's gonna go away. I don't see how they have a leg to stand on. It was an unfortunate situation, and the kids were the ones that were left kind of bearing the burden of pain, I think. So it's just a sad story because they worked so hard. Rich Lenkoff, we want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Patty.
Excellent. Have a great night. That's Rich Lenkoff from Legal Face Off on WGNplus.com.